My guest is singer Barbara Cook. During the 1950s and 60s, she was the most celebrated ingenue on the Broadway musical stage. She won a Tony Award for her performance as Marion the Librarian in the original production of The Music Man, but also stole the show and won rave reviews for her performances in Candide, Plain and Fancy, Carousel, and She Loves Me. Broadway's Barbara Cook then disappeared for several years, only to reemerge as a cabaret and concert singer. She made her Carnegie Hall debut in 1975 and went on to national and international acclaim. In 1985, she appeared with the New York Philharmonic Orchestra as Sally in the concert version of Stephen Sondheim's Follies. Last year, she brought her own concert for the theater from London back to Broadway's Ambassador Theater. All this is only background information. As for her voice, all you have to do is listen. To steal a quote from the liner notes on the back of her As of Today album, if I ever get to heaven and the angels don't all sound like Barbara Cook, God's going to have a lot to answer for. Barbara Cook, welcome to Fresh Air.
Oh, thank you very much.
It's a real treat to have you here. I'm going to start with a song from your It's Better With a Band album. It's a song that was written by your musical director, Wally Harper, and David Zippel. It's called The Ingenue. But before we hear it, I think we need to hear a little bit about how this song came to be written.
Well, I think it's a song. David Zippel wrote the words and Wally Harper wrote the music. I think it's a song that David had been thinking about writing. It started as a poem, actually. He brought it over to me and asked if I liked it, and I did, and Wally set it to music. I had about, I guess, 5 days to learn this for the concert, and that's really... It's really enough time, I suppose, except that when you're under that kind of pressure recording it and performing it for the first time, I was terrified. I kept the words on the piano just in case I forgot, and I did make one little bubble in there.
I'm sure it probably wasn't even noticed. It's such a fun song. It really pokes fun at your the early image that everybody had of you, didn't it?
Yes.
Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say I never did really think of myself as the quintessential ingenue anyway. So many of the roles I played were not actually ingenue roles. For instance, in The Music Man, this woman is in her 30s and her late 30s, and her mother is afraid she's going to become a spinster. And Cunegonda is like a cartoon.
That's in Candide, the character in Candide.
Yes, is a kind of cartoon of an ingenue. And in Oklahoma and Carousel, I played the soubrette comedy roles rather than the leading lady roles, although I did at one point go on to play the leading lady, Julie, in Carousel. Mm-hmm. So that very often I didn't play the ingenue roles, and I suppose the reason people think of me as the typical ingenue is the way I look and sound. But actually, the roles I played were very often not those roles at all.
That's very interesting. Let's hear the song.
For quite some time, I've heard that I'm alleged to be an ingenue. And yes, it's true, when I was 2, I pledged to be an ingenue. My agent said before I went to do what Doris Day would do and sign up on the dotted line if William Morris Pay would do.
William Morris Pay would do.
When I was 3, they said to me the stage would be my medium, but ingenues must pay their dues with unrelenting tedium. We must be sweet or quite discreet and dress in unappealing clothes. We may not tease our friends or hair, or swear or wear revealing clothes. One has to fear the casting couch producers, lust and greed alike. They let you like, covet you like, their hairlines all recede alike. They scream a lot and scheme a lot, and even David Miracle be calm at first, but in a burst get totally hysterical. An ingenue must promise to imprison her virginity. All men above the age of 10 are kept from her vicinity. A lady's reputation is unlikely to improve at all. A stain on that, no laundromat or cleaner can remove at all. truck of Camelot. The parts for boys you play against, they bring out all the clones to do. And movie roles you live to play, they give to Shirley Jones too. So many shows the actress knows, the critics will attack her in. It's so hard to live on guard and stay as sweet as saccharin. Add up all the pros and cons, you'll end up with a minus score. And that is why the ingenue has died out like the dinosaur.
That's the song The Ingenue from the album It's Better with a Band, recorded by my guest Barbara Cook, who's speaking to us from the studios of National Public Radio in New York. Shirley Jones did get the movie role, didn't she?
Yes, she did.
Were you a little devastated by that? Did you really want it?
Oh, sure I did. It was very hard at the time. I did two tests, actually. I was out there, and Teague DaCosta, who directed both the Broadway show and the film, was not satisfied with the first one, and so I did a second one. I certainly can't say I didn't have an opportunity, but it just didn't work out.
That was also a time, too, when whenever they transferred a Broadway musical to the movie, they invariably would find a movie star to do it.
Well, certainly that often would happen, yes.
In 1957, you did win the Tony Award for portraying Marion the Librarian in The Music Man.
Yes.
Was that a really heady time for you? Did you get good tables in restaurants and celebrities flocking to your dressing room?
Yes and no. All that time is kind of hazy to me. I felt so, I don't know, I think, unfortunately, I didn't fully enjoy that as much as I should have. I tell so many of my friends now who are experiencing a certain amount of success to really try to take it in. I don't know. I think I felt guilty about all of the things that were happening, and so I acted as if they weren't happening. It was, I try very, very much not to do that anymore.
You do tell a story in your concert about how you got to meet, it was Gary Cooper, Marlena Dietrich.
Yes.
Could you share
Dorothy
that?
Dorothy L'Amour.
Yeah. Would you share one of those stories with us?
Well, who should I talk about? Gary Cooper?
Oh, why not? Sure.
Well, Bob Preston used to come into my dressing room almost every evening when I was finishing my makeup, and we'd chat about the day. And one evening he told me that, what he said was, Coop's out front. And I'd never heard him call that, so I didn't know what he was talking about. He said, Barbara, Gary Cooper's out front. I said, listen, Bob, I want to tell you something. If I don't get to meet Gary Cooper, you just might as well not come in tomorrow night. So at the end of the performance, I hear this knock on my door, and there he was. He was, without any question, the most handsome man I've ever seen in my life. He was so tall, and he was so tan. So I said, Mr. Cooper, I'm so happy to meet you. And he said, gosh. He just looked down with those beautiful eyes and said, gosh, well, really.
You were melting.
He was really, God, what an impressive-looking man he was.
Did you ask for his autograph?
No, I didn't, come to think of it. I never thought about that until right this minute. No, I didn't. I'm sorry I didn't.
No. You grew up in Atlanta, Georgia.
Mm-hmm.
Did you always want to be a singer, taking singing lessons and all that sort of familiar route?
Well, yes, except for those times when I wanted to be an airline stewardess or a nurse, which is what little girls aspired to in those days. I can remember very well when I was certainly probably no more than 3 or 4, have very early memories. And I remember being taken to some sort of stage show with my mother and father. And I was dancing around the room when I came home and singing and pretending to be all of the people I'd seen. And I wanted very much to be up on the stage. I remember that. Very, very young memory.
You also tell a story in your concert about seeing Jeanette MacDonald in the movies.
Oh, God. You know, I wanted to be her. I wanted to be both of them. I wanted to be her. I wanted to be Nelson. I even once had a dream about meeting her. I never did meet her, actually. But I had a dream about having met her at the Russian Tea Room. And this is when I was an adult. And the dream was so real to me that I started telling my friends that I had met her because I honestly believed that I had. And I believed that for several years until I came across some sort of theater book I was reading, and in it was the date of her death. And I realized, because in my dream I had been with certain people who I hadn't met until after her death, that it was impossible. And then I called two of the other people in the dream and realized that I had been acting on this dream for several years. I mean, I absolutely, it is mad, let's face it, folks.
I think it's pretty normal, actually.
God, well, I dreamt I met her in the Russian tea room with Agnes DeMille. I'd worked with Agnes, so I know Agnes, and in my dream I went over and asked her to introduce me. Agnes said, Barbara, she said, you never met Agnes Mill. I mean, she said, you never met Jeanette McDonald. I never met Jeanette McDonald.
Her movies were always so strange. I mean, she would, you know, kind of open up the window and start to sing, and, you know, all the townspeople would kind of gather underneath the window and sing along with her. And the orchestra, I had no idea where the orchestra ever came from in any of those movies.
No, wasn't it wonderful in those movies? All of a sudden you have a 100-piece orchestra out of nowhere.
You also did some straight acting, which is
yes.
something that I didn't realize. You were in the original production of Little Murders. You mm-hmm. replaced Sandy Dennis in Any Wednesday.
Right.
Were you trying to escape musicals at that time?
No, not particularly. It was something I wanted to do. I still would like to do a play. I would rather do a book show. I'm really looking for something to do on Broadway. I would like very much to do another show.
You left for a long time. You disappeared. No one had really was hearing from you, singing or otherwise. Why did you do that?
Well, actually, let me correct that a little bit, because I didn't disappear exactly.
Uh-huh.
There was a 5-year period when I didn't sing in New York. I did do some plays during that time. I did some work with the Lincoln Center rep, and I did work out of town. But certainly, I didn't do anywhere near the amount or the kind of work that I had been doing for a number of years. There are several reasons. One is that I was getting older and needed to sort of get my ducks in a different row, if you know what I mean.
Mm.
And the theater was going through one of its lulls that it goes through every now and then. So there were fewer things available. And the other thing is that I think I needed to not work for a while. I needed to get some distance from my work, and I needed to, how can I put this? I needed to find out things about myself. I needed to change and grow and mature in a way. And I needed to get distance to do that.
You had talked before about feeling guilty about your success. I think it's something that we all feel sometimes when we have this incredible success, and it's you feel like, I'm a fake, I'm going to get found out any minute now.
Yeah, it's a very common thing. I wasn't aware of it so much at the time. I just remember feeling that, well, we played at the Winter Garden, for instance, with Plain and Fancy. And that huge billboard that's over the Winter Garden Theater, my picture was up there with Cheryl Conway, who was also in the show. And that's sort of the kind of dream one would have, you know, when you're starting out and you first come to New York, you think, oh, God, you know, if you see a sign like that, you think, gee whiz, wouldn't it be great if one of these days my picture was up there and all that sort of thing. But when it happened, it was just, you know, there's my picture was up there. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, it's success isn't quite what you expect it to be very often. It is only what it is, so that little by little, I think I've come to see that the process is the thing, and I just feel so fortunate. I can't tell you how fortunate I feel to be at my age and a woman too. It ain't easy, is it?
No.
And to have not only survived, but to have more than survived in this business, I really thank my lucky stars very, very often.
My guest is Barbara Cook. She is a singer. She has recorded albums. She has been in Broadway musicals. She has sung with major orchestras. We're going to talk about her debut at Carnegie Hall back in 1975. After we take this short break, this is Fresh Air. My guest is Barbara Cook. In 1957, she won the Tony Award for her portrayal of Marion the Librarian in The Music Man, and 30 years later, her Broadway show Barbara Cook, A Concert for the Theater, was also nominated for a Tony Award.
No, it wasn't.
It was for Best...
No, it wasn't nominated. Actually, I did win the Drama Desk Award.
You did win the Drama Desk Award?
Yes, but it was not nominated for Tony.
Oh, I swear that I saw it for Best...
I'm glad you think so.
I wanted you to get it so badly that I put it in there.
That's very sweet.
Please,
of you.
Pardon my error. When you did finally come back to New York and you were singing and you started in cabarets and then... You made your debut at Carnegie Hall in 1975. You were heavier. Your physical image had changed. Was that hard, knowing that maybe the first thing that people were going to see about you was the way you looked?
Yeah, it was really difficult. It was very difficult, and I must say, there was a great deal of publicity around that time. You know, it's like I was discovered all over again. Which is really kind of silly, but that's the way it works, isn't it?
I think Newsweek called you an overnight star, right?
No, it's just, it's absurd. But it was difficult, yeah, sure. Mm. But I needed to work, and I needed to really get out and do things again.
We have a recording from that debut. It is from an album, Barbara Cook, at Carnegie Hall, and it's a song that I think you have to sing every time you you do perform in concert. It's called Dear Friend and Ice Cream.
Dear friend, I am so sorry about last night. It was a nightmare in every way, but together you and I will laugh at last night someday. Ice cream, he brought me ice cream, vanilla ice cream, imagine that. I am so sorry about last night. It was a nightmare anyway, but together you and I will have a last night someday. I sat there waiting in that cafe and never guessing that you were fat. That you were near. You were outside looking bold. Oh, dear friend, I am so sorry about last night. Last night, I was so nasty. Well, he deserved it, but even so, that George is not like this George. This is a new George that I don't know. To a man I love. It's almost like a dream, and strange as it may seem, who came to offer me
album Barbara Cook at Carnegie Hall, a song from she loves me. I want to be accurate this time. Yes?
Yes, that's correct.
When I saw you do the show in London for the first time, it was in a very small fringe theater. You did this song almost as an afterthought. It was, the crowd wanted you to do an encore, and everyone was yelling, ice cream, ice cream. Do you sort of feel an obligation to do these Broadway show tunes?
I resist doing them, not ice cream so much, because that's one that people really do seem to want me to do all the time. But the others I do generally resist doing somewhat, because, how can I put it? So many of them have their roots in operetta, so that they are singy. You have to really sort of sing out Louise. And I'm inclined to not want to do that, as much as I would rather have a song that I can interpret more.
One that we don't associate then with a character, in other words.
Not that necessarily. It's very hard to describe. You just have to sing too hard with some of those things.
Oh, I see. It's laziness. No.
Yeah. It's basic lazy.
In the concert for the theater, which eventually did make it to Broadway, you did do something that did surprise me. As far as this whole sing out Louise routine is concerned, you put down the microphone, and you sang "Why Did I Choose You" without one.
Yeah.
Just to prove that you could still do it?
No, it makes a nice moment to do that, you know?
And I'm reaching the balconies.
Well, it forces people to listen even more. It forces them to. So that you have that extra chance of communicating.
You do that in these shows. Even in a big theater, you have this ability to make me feel as though you're singing only to me, even if I'm way up in heaven, you know, in the in the last row of
the balcony.
Oh, that's
nice. Thank you. A lot of people say that. Thanks very much.
Are you singing to one person? We've been told about that in radio, is we're talking to masses of people, but if you pretend you're talking to one person, you tend to reach everybody.
I'm not usually conscious of doing that, but I do hate it when I'm in a theater and the lights are set up and the structure of the theater is such that I can't see people's faces at all. If I can't see a few people, I just hate it. It's very hard. It's like trying to have a conversation to... it would be easier, for instance, if we were actually seeing each other, you know.
Yes.
There's all sorts of body language, you know, that you get, and I don't know. It's very hard. I think to sing to just a big black expanse. I would much rather be able to see people, and occasionally I will address a line to a person. I don't do it very often because I think that embarrasses people very often, and they're afraid that I'm going to pull them into the evening in a way that they would not like. So I don't like to do that too much because I don't want to create anxiety in the listener. You know,
you did a concert version of Follies, Stephen Sondheim's Follies. How did that happen? How were you approached to do that part?
It was Stephen's idea for me to do it, and I knew about it at least a year, I guess, before we did the concerts. I had no idea, and as I think most of us had no idea, that it would turn out to be such an event. It was really extraordinary.
It was the album won a Grammy Award. I know a few sound engineers, and I was hearing from them that your voice was the only one that made them, you know, sort of stop cold and listen to what was going on instead of, you know, fiddling with their knobs and sitting there bored and,
that's,
you know,
nice,
reading magazines. The show that you brought to Broadway, Concert for a Theater, when you started out in the small theater in London, had you intended to bring it back?
No, not at all. We'd been working on several different ideas, several different ways of trying to present a musical evening. Even before Lena Horne did her show, we had been talking about it and trying to find a way to do it. At first we thought, well, maybe I should do it with another person, and it had several forms. And we just kept not feeling that it was right, when we went to London to do the act, we were at the point with the show where we thought we just didn't know where to head. We didn't know what to do next. So it was just sort of sitting around, lying fallow, had been for a few months. And then the reaction when we opened at the Donmar was so extraordinary that we did begin to think, well, perhaps we could do this, something simpler than we had originally expected that we would have to do for Broadway. And then when we moved from the Donmar into the Albury, we made a conscious effort to add theater songs and to add a little talk and to try to make it more of a theater evening than we had had at the Donmar. And when that was received as well as it was, we thought, well, you know, maybe we have been trying to gussy this thing up more than we need to, and perhaps it would work if we just, in New York, if we just do this very simple kind of evening. And otherwise, I think there's no way, if we hadn't done this in London, there's no way I would have had the courage to present anything as simple as that for Broadway.
And you got wonderful reviews.
Yeah, mostly they were quite good. There were some that were not.
But I saw the show and I thought it was wonderful. And
oh, thanks.
Unfortunately, we are out of time. Thank you very much.
Oh, our time is up already.
Yes, our time is up. Thank you very much, Barbara Cook, for joining us. Barbara Cook has been my guest. Last year, she returned to Broadway after a 20-year absence when she brought her concert for the theater to New York. I'm Leanne Hansen, and this is Fresh Air.